WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is your favorite time of the day. 1 o'clock has hit, and Current Sports has graced the airwaves. Folks, we have a fantastic show in store for you. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. And today, we'll chat about the MSU win over Indiana last night at the Breslin Center. Folks, we have not seen this team play that well all year, in my opinion. My goodness, just a good old-fashioned beatdown of Tom Crean and the Hoosiers. We'll discuss how that happened last night. We'll also chat about some interesting comments that head coach of the MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio, had concerning the hire of Jim Harbaugh at University of Michigan. And we'll debate whether or not Ndamukong Suh will stay as a Detroit Lion. Yes, that will be our Top 5 Tuesday, folks. We'll have all of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, let's start this baby off like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this January 6th, 2015. All right, folks, Denzel Valentine and Brandon Dawson bounced back after subpar games during that Maryland matchup and helped Michigan State explode past Indiana 70-50 on Monday night. Ugh. Valentine scored 15 points, 11 more than in a double overtime loss to Maryland last Tuesday, and Brandon Dawson added 14 points and 13 rebounds for the Spartans, who are now 10-5, 1-1 in the Big Ten. Michigan State now visits Iowa on Thursday night. All right, Michigan is down another player. Junior offensive lineman Kyle Bosch, who was away from the U of M team for the final 11 games of the season, will transfer, according to a report on 24/7 Sports. Now, Bosch, who tweeted earlier Monday, quote, back in Ann Arbor, he made three starts, played in five games as a true freshman, forced into the role to offensive line struggles and injuries, he will be transferring, folks. All right, a former Michigan star is reportedly interviewing with another former Michigan star today. Scouts.com Sam Webb reported this morning that former Michigan star running back Tyrone Wheatley, most recently with the Buffalo Bills running backs coach, is interviewing for a spot on Jim Harbaugh's Michigan coaching staff today. Now, he was a star running back for the Wolverines from 1991 to 1994. Wheatley still ranks number 5 on the school's all-time rushing list with a total of 4,287 career rushing yards. All right, how about this news? This is fantastic news. The DeWitt and Hazlitt girls basketball teams will head to their CAAC Red Clash on Friday night as the state's top-ranked teams. How about that? Two top-ranked teams from around this area. Now, DeWitt is in Class A, Hazlitt is in Class B, where each ranked in the top spot in their respective classes in the first Associated Press basketball poll of the season, which was released today. Now, the Panthers and Vikings are both undefeated. The Panthers at 7-0, the Vikings at 6-0. One of three area teams atop their class in this week's ranking, so there's not only two, but there's also one more, folks, and that third one is Carson City's Crystal, which is also undefeated at 6-0. They are the number one team in Class C. So hats off to DeWitt, Haslam, and Carson City Crystal. Wow, are they good or what? All right, the Detroit Tigers today agreed to terms on a one-year contract with left-handed pitcher Tom Gorzolani, a 32-year-old veteran who has played for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Chicago Cubs, Washington Nationals, and Milwaukee Brewers. To create a spot in the 40-man roster, the Tigers designated right-handed pitcher Luke Pekonen for assignment. So there you have that. Tom Gorzolani, now a Detroit Tiger. All right, the Detroit Pistons will look to extend its winning streak to 6 games tonight, but it will face one of the league's elite to do so. Now, the red, white, and royal blue will take on the defending NBA champion San Antonio Spurs on the road. The Pistons are 5-0 since the release of four Josh Smith. Tip time tonight is set for 8:30 p.m. All right, and the Detroit Red Wings, who currently sit in the third spot of the NHL's Atlantic Division, look to shake off a loss to the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday by taking on the Edmonton Oilers tonight on the road. Now, this is the second of a six-game road trip for the Wings, so they certainly are going to be tested throughout this stretch. Puck drop is set for 9:30 p.m. tonight, and sad news in the world of sports, Ali Sherman, the diminutive son of Russian immigrants who coached the New York Giants to NFL champion games in his first three seasons, has sadly passed away at the age of 91. Now, Sherman's family said on Monday that he died Saturday at his Manhattan home. Sherman's Giants lost to the Green Bay Packers in the 1961 and 1962 championship games and to the Chicago Bears in the 1963 title game. Now, he was the NFL Coach of the Year in 1961 and 62 and finished 57-51-4 in eight seasons with the Giants. Now, Sherman was also the studio analyst alongside Chris Berman on ESPN's first NFL broadcast back in 1987. And one extended headline for you, folks. In about a few hours, you'll know who the newest class of the Baseball Hall of Fame will be out in Cooperstown. You don't want to miss when that announcement will take place. All right, well, that wraps it up. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners, folks. The phone lines are now hot and open. And that number to call in if you want to talk about anything that is on your sports noggin here on Current Sports, you probably got it saved on speed dial as we speak. But for those that don't, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. I want to also extend a shout-out to Brandon. Brandon called in yesterday during our show and won a pair of tickets to go see the MSU and Indiana game last night at the Breslin Center. I believe he took his father. It was a pleasure meeting him when he came by to pick up the tickets, and he shot me a text after the game saying that he had one fantastic time and that he listens to Current Sports every day. So shout-out to my man Brandon. I'm glad you had a great time, folks. And again, the number to call in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I am certainly excited about today's show. Later on, during our second segment of today's Current Sports, you know, each and every Tuesday, we love to debate a top five sporting topic, whether it be the top five point guards of all time, the top five MSU games of the season, the top five greatest quarterbacks in the game. I mean, we love to dive into and have a lot of fun, frankly, with Top 5 Tuesday. So today's Top 5 Tuesday, of course, in lieu of the Detroit Lions loss to the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, ending their Super Bowl hopes and dreams. What will happen with defensive lineman Ndamukong Suh? That has been the talk of the town. We talked about it yesterday as well. So today we decided to continue that theme because it is certainly a hot topic and hot news. So we're going to give you the top reasons, the top five reasons why Ndamukong Suh should or should not leave the Detroit Lions. Again, that's our Top 5 Tuesday today. The top five reasons why Ndamukong Suh should or should not leave the Detroit Lions. I want to get your thoughts on that. What do you think Suh should or should not do, and what will or will he not do? 517-355-9527 is the number to call in and weigh in on that. We'll also talk about this fantastic Detroit Pistons streak. Of course, all of you out there know that I am probably the biggest Detroit Pistons fan you'll ever come across. I popped out the womb wearing a Chauncey Billups jersey, okay? I always joke around with that. Now, I got to ask, though, because, you know, ever since the Pistons have gotten rid of Josh Smith, they have won. And one, and one, and one, and one. Yeah, five straight games since releasing Josh Smith, folks. So, you know, it's fair to ask, is this winning streak a fluke? We'll talk about that. And also later on, we'll also debate about who is now the favorite to win the Super Bowl, now that the wild card games are all finito. All right, so we'll talk about all of that and so much more. But you know what, Alex, to start the show, I want to dedicate just a brief moment I wanted to do it yesterday, but we of course ran out of time during the back end of our show. But I barely got to sort of just kind of just express my feelings on the sad news that occurred on Sunday morning concerning a pioneer, a trendsetter in the world of sports broadcasting, in the world of sports journalism in general, Stuart Scott, longtime ESPN SportsCenter anchor, sadly passed away at the age of 49 Sunday morning. It was no secret that Stu was certainly in an extensive and hard-fought battle with the disease of cancer. Cancer is such a it kind of touches me hands-on so much because my grandfather actually passed away. A man who I was so close to, he passed away at the hands of prostate cancer during my junior year of college. So, and I'm sure many of you out there listening have had loved ones, family members, and so forth, friends who have battled with this disease, are probably currently battling with disease and maybe know someone who lost that fight. So, you know, when I heard the news of Stuart Scott passing away, again, 49 years old, a young guy, folks, a young person to pass away at 49. I mean, my goodness. When I heard about it, I kind of had to take a brief moment because many of you who know me personally or even on this show, I may have even brought it up, know that Stuart Scott was one of the biggest reasons and one of my biggest inspirations into even getting into this industry and becoming a sports broadcaster. I remember when I was little, I mean, watching him on television and watching his creative way in which he used to do his broadcast on ESPN by taking risks and using different puns and different lines like booyah, you know, cooler than the other side of the pillow. I mean, countless sayings and phrases. He just made sports fun. And that's something that, you know, when I was growing up watching him and just seeing how much fun he would have with his broadcast, I, at a point, when I hit high school and you know, when I started to hit my senior year of high school and said, okay, what do I want to do with my life? You know, I'm not going to the NBA here. No Division I schools were knocking on my door. And I would look at a guy like Stuart Scott and look at how much fun that he had while doing, sports broadcasts. I said, man, I want to be like that guy. He was one of my inspirations. And, you know, his life was one that, you know, he lived to the fullest. I'm not sure if many of you caught the ESPYs this of last summer in 2014. But Stu was actually honored in a pretty cool way by receiving the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance. Of course, Jimmy Valvano, a legendary college basketball coach, he passed away and ESPN decided to dedicate an award in his honor for those going through cancer or just going through a disease or some hardship that they were handling with a smile on their face. And Stu was certainly the right guy to receive that award last year. But he delivered such a powerful speech during those ESPYs. One that, yeah, I'm not going to lie, brought a tear to my eye. It was something that was so inspirational and a true testament to how Stu lived his life. But again, folks, we lost a pioneer. We lost a man who really set a lot of bars high, and we'll probably never see another one like him. But again, he touched my life without seeing a guy like Stu growing up. I mean, who knows? I may not be in this industry. Who knows? I mean, because again, he was one of the guys who lit that fire inside of me to chase this dream. And I believe we do have a bite from one of his former coworkers, Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen actually was, when Stu first started his career at ESPN at SportsCenter as a co-anchor, Rich Eisen was one of his first partners. And here's a clip from Rich Eisen upon hearing the news of the passing of Stuart Scott on Sunday.
I love this man. I still love this man. And the fact that he has passed away is absolutely mind-boggling and a travesty. He battled cancer as bravely as anybody else, and I know there are many people out there who are battling cancer right now and would want you to know to keep fighting, and that he didn't lose this battle of cancer. He fought it as bravely as he possibly could, and as you go to bed tonight, flip your pillow over to the cool side. And before you go to sleep, as Stewart would say, you hit your knees tonight and pray to the big man for his beautiful daughters who he loved, Taylor and Sydney. Pray for Stewart and his family, his parents, his siblings, his girlfriend, his ex-wife, everybody who he loved. And that includes you, the sports fans, even those who hated on him. He thrived on it. That's because he is who he is and was, I can't believe it's a past tense, who he was. Stewart Scott is dead at the age of 49. I love you, Stewart. Wherever you are, Godspeed. Rest in peace.
Wow. What a touching moment. Again, that was literally 10 minutes after Rich Eisen had heard the news that his friend and former co-worker Stewart Scott had passed away. Again, Stu, you know, rest in peace, my man. I have the privilege of also calling Stu my brother, literally, not figuratively. He was a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the same fraternity that I pledged when I was in college. I always wanted to meet him one day and give him the fraternal grip, but I guess I have to wait until possibly meeting him one day and possibly another life. So rest in peace, Stu. You will be missed. Folks, again, our phone lines are open all the way up until 2 o'clock, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I believe we have a few callers here, Alex, a few that want to talk some sports here. I believe, let's go to line two. Jim from Lansing wants to talk a little Lions. Jim, how you doing, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've just seen the still shots of it. I couldn't tell. The controversial play with the linebacker getting hit in the back by the ball when he was contacting the Lions guy, receiver. The question, I can't tell, and maybe you've seen it in motion. Did he make contact with the Lion receiver before the pass hit him in the back, or did the pass hit him in the back and then he hit the Lion, contacted the Lion receiver?
Well, I tell you what, Jim, from my understanding, and I've seen that play from the front angle, from the back angle, and Alex, you can probably weigh on this as well. From my understanding, Brandon Pettigrew was contacted before the ball that was delivered to him and hit the defender in the back. Now, again, in the NFL, now they do allow a little bit of contact once the route starts. They do allow a 5-yard window for a corner or any defensive back to make contact with an eligible receiver. But after that 5 yards, you gotta lay off and you gotta play the ball. And that's not what happened in that instance. The defender didn't play the ball. You have to at least show a sign that you have located the football once it's released from the quarterback's hands. The ball was not located. And it seemed initially that the ref saw that, and they came out and actually made the announcement that they were calling pass interference and then decided to pick up the flag because another ref had another angle and caught it face guarding. There is no face guarding in the NFL, so the penalty was negated. So, yes, to answer your question, Jim, I do believe that there was contact before that ball was delivered.
Yeah, I understand there was contact downfield, you know, closer to the line of receiving.
Right.
But as he was crashing in, if the ball hit him, hit the linebacker before he impacted the receiver, then I don't think it'd be interference. And I was just the timing, this bang bang timing of it, I just couldn't tell from any pictures I'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Jim. And again, yeah, that was Cowboys rookie linebacker Anthony Hitchens, who was initially flagged for that pass interference call. And again, in the NFL, though, I mean, you've seen so many times throughout the course of this year, even last year. I mean, if you're a defender and if you do not locate, the biggest thing here is locating the football. It'd be another thing if he turned around and saw that the pass was coming and he was in the way of Brandon Pettigrew. But he was not even thinking about where Matthew Stafford was, didn't even know where the football was, probably didn't even know the football was coming until it knocked him in the back of the shoulder pad. If you don't do that, 9 times out of 10, you're going to see a flag thrown for pass interference, and that's initially what we saw called. But again, I tell you what, you know, this is it's a topic that, again, Alex, we're going to be talking about this call until the start of next year, and probably throughout next year as well. So it's still being talked about. We have another caller on line one. Kurt from Grand Ledge is on Current Sports. How you doing, Kurt?
Not too bad, Al. Okay, so I'm going to leave the call alone and try to address a couple of the things already you've mentioned on the show in terms of topics.
Yeah.
First of all, the thing about Stuart Scott that strikes me is watching the people who have said things about him, even at, say, like small pieces right at the end of their show on ESPN or whatever, it was very clear he impacted a lot of people. And you can't ask for anything better than that. In regards to the Ndamukong Suh, the answer to that question is real simple. It's called the franchise tag. The Lions don't have to lose him this year. They can put the franchise tag on him. It'll cost them a boatload of money.
Right.
But and they'd be better off trying to negotiate a long-term contract that may have less of a salary cap hit for them. But the salary cap's going to go up this year because the NFL is making a boatload of cash. And, you know, he's not going anywhere. Slap the salary cap or franchise tag on him and then negotiate from there.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and that's something, you know, Kurt, we discussed yesterday about, because the Lions do have that option of slapping on the franchise tag. And if they do, and again, you're talking about the boatload of money. I mean, you're talking about $36 million in cap space. Now, you know, I tell you what, Ndamukong Suh, he played out of his mind this year, Kurt. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, hey, he was in a contract year. He was trying to show and debut to other teams that, yeah, he's one of the best in the game and he deserves a big contract. And I think the Lions know that if they lose him, it's going to be a big blow to him. So, hey, I mean, who knows? Even though it is a big blow, I'll have to really look at the numbers. So if they do enact the franchise tag, how much money do they have to allocate elsewhere? And, again, they have a lot of superstars on this team, too. Look at Matthew Stafford's contract. I mean, they got the best wide receiver in the game in Calvin Johnson. You got a guy like Reggie Bush who announced today that he does want to come back as a Lion. You got Joik Bell. I mean, there's so many other areas in here. How do you allocate that money? I would not want to be the financial advisor for the Detroit Lions, I tell you that.
That is going to be a tough job.
Yeah.
The one little piece that you started was one of the headlines about Jim Harbaugh interviewing Tyrone Wheatley.
Yeah.
I found that quite fascinating from this perspective. The one assistant coach who survived all the coaching changes has been Fred Jackson, who's a running back coach. And he's always seemed to survive because he's been such a good recruiter. And now they're talking to Tyrone Wheatley. It makes me wonder if Jackson is going to survive this coach coming in or not. So that'll be interesting to see. And then I would just want to go to the Michigan State basketball game last night and say they're a different team when Tum-Tum Nairn starts. And one of the big reasons they're a different team when he starts is that he's able to stay in front of a dribble penetrator. You know, it's like if there's a problem on the MSU's basketball team, it's that they give up dribble penetration too easy. And the fact that Tum-Tum is so quick and so fast and can stay in front of someone who's trying to dribble penetrate helps him out immensely on defense.
That is a fantastic point. Kurt, I mean, maybe you should be hosting because that was one of my points I wanted to make today. Great point.
You guys have a great day.
All right, you too, Kurt. Appreciate that. That is a very, very good point that, we might as well get to right now, Alex. Why not? Let's dive into it. Of course, Michigan State last night just delivered a whomping to Indiana, a 20-point win over the Indiana Hoosiers last night to, again, you know, extend their Big Ten record now after losing to Maryland in the start of their Big Ten season, now to 1-1. Denzel Valentine, he had 15 points. Again, that's 11 more than that double overtime loss to Maryland last Tuesday, a week from today. And Brandon Dawson had 14 and 13. 14 points, 13 rebounds for him, a double-double for him as well. Again, Michigan State will now visit Iowa on Thursday night. But, hey, you know, we were at the game last night. Here is my post-game report from the Breslin Center. It's been a season thus far that has had many of the Spartan faithful panicking a bit due to a few eyebrow-raising losses that revealed a lack of chemistry and consistency. But throw that all out the window tonight as MSU closes out the longest homestand in the Tom Izzo era in one emphatic way, a 20-point win over Indiana, moving the Spartans now to 1-1 in the Big Ten. Coming off the Maryland loss in this game now, I mean, what a bounce-back game for you guys, especially looking at that first half today. Defensively, I mean, you guys took it to another level. I mean, what was the key today?
We feel like that's what made us lose the game against Maryland. All we needed is just one defensive stop, and we didn't get it. So this week we really harped on that, and, I mean, I think that was a difference in this game.
All week, Coach talked about it being an effort game, and whoever played the hardest was going to win the game. And I felt like we came in, everybody bought into that. We came in so locked in on the defensive end, man. It was unbelievable. The crowd was in it. You know, we just thank God for a good win, man.
You know, it's funny, Javon. I mean, at the beginning of this year, especially looking at kind of, it's been kind of a roller coaster year. I mean, again, you start Big Ten play with a loss. A lot of people using the panic word with you guys. Don't you feel as though it's a little too early to panic right now?
Yeah, definitely too early to panic. It's not an excuse, but we're a new team, so we got a lot of new guys on this team, and we're just starting to figure it out, and I feel like we got it now.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I did question their heart and their a little bit. I mean, I just felt like, you know, we're finding ways to lose games instead of finding ways to win games, and wasn't very happy.
Coach talked about us, you know, playing with energy and playing with just passion. He said, you know, this game was going to be based off, you know, energy, effort, and, you know, character, and that's what we did. We kept telling each other that.
So as the great Aaron Rodgers would say, relax. Tom Izzo teams are like fine wine. They get better with time. And the next opportunity for the Spartans to do so comes this Thursday on the road against Iowa. I'm Al Martin here at the Breslin Center for WKR's Current Sports. Again, yeah, that's my post-game report from last night's game. Again, you can check it out by going to WKAR.org. If you want to get the visual of that, you just heard from Travis Trice, Tum-Tum Naren, Javon Best, Tom Izzo, and Brandon Dawson throughout that report. So I now invite the man behind the glass, Alex Shark, to dive into it. Well, no, Alex is actually taking a caller, so I'm going to invite him in a second. But I want to dive into this game again, folks. If you want to call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, and weigh in on this game. You can do so right now. But I tell you what, I have to agree with what Tom Izzo had to say in that post game. Best defensive game of the year for Michigan State. I tell you what, in that first half, especially, Michigan State jumped out to a 19-4 lead in the first 10 minutes of the game. I haven't seen Michigan State play defense like that all year, folks. All year. You know, they clogged the driving lanes. They did a great job and contesting shots. I thought it was a great move. Now, you know, going back to Kurt's call about Tum-Tum Naren and how he believes that, you know, when Tum-Tum Naren starts, you know, he provides defensive, you know, a defensive position from a guard's perspective. He's able to stop penetration from whatever guard is playing because he's so quick on the ball. And I tell you what, when you got a guy like Yogi Ferrell, who is certainly speedy, he can create his own shot, he can get to the lane, he's got a great jumper on his hand, you want to slow him down in any way possible. Now, I think ideally why the move was made, and again, it turned out to be a good one because Tum-Tum had his best game in an MSU uniform thus far. I think a lot of it had to do with Tum-Tum starting because Travis Trice simply was not healthy. You know, Alex and I were in the locker room. We talked to Travis Trice right after the game, and I looked at Travis, and his eyes were kind of low. And, you know, before the interview even started, he said, man, I just want to go to bed right now. He met with the team doctor right after the game. He told me, and, you know, he said, yeah, they don't know what it is, so we don't know if it's just a common cold, if it's the flu, who knows what it is. But Travis Trice was out of it last night. It was remarkable that he even took the floor last night. So a lot of it had to do with Travis Trice not being healthy, the reason why Tum-Tum got the start, but he certainly took advantage of that start. I'm dubbing him, and he wasn't feeling the nickname when I brought it to him last night in the locker room, but I'm dubbing him as the Bahama Mamba. The Bahama Mamba, I thought he had, you know, he had his first start last night. I thought he had a very solid game. He took a career high, 5 shots. So you started to see, and that's one thing that I've always been harping on when it comes to Tum-Tum. Where is his confidence at? Because I haven't seen him take many shots. When he does, they don't look like confident drives to the rim or confident jump shots at all. Last night was the first time and the first glimpse of confidence, pure confidence, that I saw from Tum-Tum. Again, he took 5 shots. He went 3 for 5. He had 7 points. He also managed to corral 2 assists and also had 1 steal. No turnovers from him either. He took great care of the basketball. No turnovers, I should say, in 26 minutes, I should say. So no turnovers in 26 minutes for Tum-Tum. He did a great job of managing the game, playing within his means, and picking and choosing when to score. So maybe this is the breakout game for Tum-Tum that we see, you know, him possibly being having a regular 7 points on a nightly basis. Who knows? But Tum-Tum, this is a great game for him to sort of get his feet wet into this MSU offense. And defensively, he was great as well. We have a caller right now. Mike from Saginaw is on line one. Mike, how you doing?
How you doing there, Mr. L. Martin? Happy New Year to you. I was going to tell you, did you go to the football game in Dallas?
I did not. No, I did not make the trip. Alex is out there as a fan, but no, we did not. And I was sitting there watching that game like, man, I wish I was there to witness that one. It was one of the best college football games I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was really impressed. I gave up on them, too. Unfortunately, I did in the third quarter. I said, man, I'm going to turn this off and do something else. And I just turned it on the last 5 minutes of the game.
Oh, man, Mike, where's your green at, man? Come on, you got to stick when the fight is out. Come on now, brother.
Oh, you're right. You are right, man. That taught me a lesson. Stay with your teams and everything. What I was going to tell you, AT&T Stadium in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's like a tourist attraction or that's just a stadium they built for $1 billion and they just say, well, the cost of it, people will be fascinated. Because it's like the Dallas Cowboys, yeah, they won Super Bowls and everything. What do you think about that? Do you think they are like a team that deserve more publicity? But I believe Pittsburgh Steelers deserve just as much publicity they do. But it's just like the Dallas Cowboys are more out there than a lot of teams that the TV networks, they like the Dallas Cowboys. It's something about ESPN coverage too. They love the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
what's your opinion on it?
Well, I tell you what, Mike, first off, and this is coming from the mouth straight from a Dallas Cowboy fan. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Cowboys have been good for, you know, if you look at the 90s, I mean, they had such a dynasty in that era with Emmitt Smith, I mean, with Troy Aikman. I mean, they had so many. I mean, they were ideally America's team. I mean, they were dominant in the 90s. And, mm-hmm. you know, being dubbed America's team brings a lot of attention. And I tell you what, you know, when you look at it, Mike, when you look at that stadium, AT&T Stadium, it's so big. I mean, you got the big scoreboard. I mean, it's one of the most, arguably, it probably is the most beautiful NFL stadium, one of the best just sports stadiums in the entire nation. I mean, it's all the product of Jerry Jones right there. I mean, they dub it Jerry World for a reason. Jerry Jones is one of the richest executives in all of sports. He has that type of money to throw around, and I do think it's two areas. I think it is a tourist attraction, no doubt about it. I mean, I want to go down there and visit it one day because I've heard extraordinary things about it, even coming from the mouths of some of the journalists, local journalists who went down there to actually cover that game, Michigan State versus Baylor. They said it was unbelievable. So, yeah, it is a tourist attraction. It aids to the branding of a franchise, and I think that is big when you're talking about any sports team for that matter. And, you know, two, I do think that in many regards, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, they haven't won a Super Bowl since the 90s. They haven't had much success in the playoffs. Sure. They have a perception every single year that, okay, they're overrated. This year, I think that they were tremendously underrated and surpassed a lot of people's expectations. There are a lot of people that thought that they wouldn't even get past the Detroit Lions. It's debatable on how that happened, but they did, and they move on now to you know, further into the playoffs. This team is a very well-balanced team that I don't think they're getting a lot of respect for.
Okay. Would you rather have a Jerry Jones as an owner or the people who own the Lions?
Oh, I like Jerry Jones. I like Jerry Jones because from a branding perspective, I mean, like you said, even when they're not winning, you're still talking about the Dallas Cowboys because of that branding perspective. I love Jerry Jones.
You got to give him credit because he's doing the best that he can to make sure it's good. It's another Dallas owner I really like, too, is Mike Cuban.
Yeah, I really
like him. I wish he would have bought the Pistons because he would have marketed them and everything. They wouldn't even have a half empty arena if he owned this team up here.
Right.
Because
I think
Mark, you know, Mark Cuban, like I said, Dirk Nowitzki, look what he did. He went out and got Rajon Rondo. He went out and get Dirk Nowitzki. He didn't just let him grow old like the Lakers let Kobe grow old. And if LeBron keeps playing, he's going to be the oldest superstar around.
Right. No, that is true. That is definitely. But yeah, I think Mark Cuban has done a fantastic job. I mean, you talk about branding. He's also one of those owners. Now, a lot of people don't like Jerry or Mark because they feel as though they have too much of a hands-on approach when it comes to the personnel on the team, possibly when it comes to the coaching on the team. I can see that angle to it as well, where some executives need to just let the coach do their job. I can see that angle as well. But again, from a branding and from a marketing standpoint, I mean, hey, those are two of the best in the biz right there, Mike.
Yes, they are. I want to talk about basketball right quick. I was watching Michigan State game. And I know, I mean, it looks like Wisconsin might win the Big Ten this year, but I enjoy watching this team. I don't know. It's something about this team. I enjoy it. The last few years, it's like they was like they start. They was dependent on one player. It was like Keith Appling last year or Payne. I mean, you do need players like that. When things don't run, you can't run your offense. You need to have a player that break down the defense to be able to score.
Mm.
But I kind of like this team. It seems like those guys get along. They like each other and they accept. You know, they accept their roles more than the other teams did. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for your call. And, you know, when it comes to this Michigan State team, again, I still think they're trying to find themselves. I mean, last night was certainly a step in the right direction. Again, last night was the first time, Alex, that I can say that Michigan State got back to Michigan State men's basketball. They looked like the teams of Tom Izzo's past. I mean, they weren't jacking up a lot of threes. I mean, when they were there, they took them, of course, but they didn't heavily rely on it because of defense. Defense led to great transition buckets. And even when they were made buckets by Indiana, they were trying to get the ball out of bounds really quick and get down the court and try to score really quickly. And I think that's the key to this team. When they play great defense and when they get out on the break and run and rebound great, because, again, rebounding has a lot to do with it too. You have to have a great rebounding core in order to corral those misses and get down the court on outlet passes quickly. When Michigan State does that, they are successful. And looking at that rebounding edge, they had a 50-28 edge on the glass. Brandon Dawson had a double-double, 14 points, 13 rebounds. He's leading the Big Ten in rebounds right now. Unbelievable. Dawson is certainly a man on the boards. Costello chipped in with 7 rebounds. So again, when they play great defense, and again, Indiana making just 2 of his first 16 shots. Dawson did a great job against Trey Williams. Tum-Tum against Yogi Ferrell, I hit on him. When they play great defense, they are able to get out on the break and get buckets. That's the key to success.
Let me ask one question right quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
One more question. I just want to ask you, too. Kobe Bryant made a statement about the players in America that don't know how to – They're not playing the basketball because they so dependent on the AAU system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hang the phone call, but here's my take on that. I mean, I'm mad at Kobe because of this. There's a lot of players that wouldn't be in the NBA right now because of the AAU. And I mean, I resent Kobe for saying that. Okay, Kobe, you had a father that played professional basketball and you went to Italy and learned the game. But here, you're lucky that it's not – those kids that come from the AAU system, look at all the areas where they come from and everything, like the cities. You can't play basketball outside no more because because of the culture has really shifted and it's really changed to people and not being friendly to young people and the kids, especially adults, because when kids do bad things, most adults is involved with them. So I'm just really mad at Kobe for saying something like that. That was not a proper statement for him to be saying, and I read
really?
Mike DeCourcy's statement.
Well, I tell you what. Well, Mike, when he made it, I kind of, you know, and I think Alex may have agreed with me. I agree with Kobe 100%. But I'm going to save that rant for another day, though, man. That's an interesting take on that.
I appreciate you letting me talk, and you have a good one, man.
Hey.
I'll call you many more times later.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your call as always, my man. We got another one, Rick, from I believe Grand Ledge is on. Grand Rapids, excuse me. Thank you, Alex. Grand Rapids is online, too. Rick, how you doing, my man?
Good. Yeah, Schilling had 9 points and 10 rebounds, too. So.
Yeah, Schilling. That's another one I wanted to bring up. Yeah, he went 4 for 5, 10 points and 9 rebounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, the Rose Bowl was fantastic. I said to my son, he's a graduate of Michigan State, I said, if they're going again, I'm going. And I said, if we have to wait another 26 years, I probably won't be here in 26 years, so let's go. So that was great. But the setting of that Cotton Bowl, if anybody's out in that area, take a tour of that place. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. 3,500 TV sets. And then one of the interesting facts, they said there's that huge, gigantic TV, or whatever you want to call it, costs $40 million.
That's yeah,
the total
expensive.
Cost of the previous venue was $38 million, something like that. So. But it's unbelievable. I'm wondering what's going on with I wasn't able to watch a lot of it. The girls you know, playing in Ann Arbor, and they said that they only had seven scholarship players due to injuries, and I don't know if girls were kicked off the team or what. Do you know anything about the girls' basketball team? I'll hang up and listen.
For Michigan State, you mean, Rick?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, you know, because I caught some of the highlights of that game over the weekend. I listened to Susie Merchant's presser. And, yeah, they had a lot of injuries on the team, and a lot of them got the flu bug. A lot of people don't know. I mean, in that game, Torrey Jankowska and Ariel Powers, and I believe a few other players in that team, they all had the flu. And I'm sitting there like, oh, my goodness. And they still played, though, and it was remarkable because Ariel Powers, I believe she had something like, you know, 26 points in that game. Of course, they were lacking in many areas, though. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't that much depth on the bench for them. But, yeah, a lot of them were just sick. And you saw that with the – I don't know, maybe there's a trend going on with MSU Athletics because maybe they need to just separate a little bit from each other because, you know, looking at last night, Denzel Valentine and Travis Trice were also sick. So, yeah, so that's basically what that was. They had a few injuries. I'm not sure exactly what the injuries were, but more so, a lot of them were sick more than anything. But yeah, a tough game for him, though, because Susie Merchant has had an impeccable track record against U of M in these most recent years, and they just couldn't get the job done because they certainly weren't healthy in that game. Not to give Michigan State an excuse, hey, you got to give hats off to Michigan this year. They have a few weapons there, including an incredible freshman guard who's really been tearing it up. I think Michigan is going to be something to contend with this year, but Michigan State has got to get healthy. I think Ariel Powers has got to get some help as well. But yeah, I mean, and again, going back to MSU men's basketball game before we hit our break here, Alex. You know, Matt Costello, again, he had 7 rebounds. Gavin Schilling is a guy I wanted to bring up. Thanks a lot, Rick, for doing that. Schilling, he went 4 for 5, 10 points, 9 rebounds. Those two helping Dawson down low on the boards, and Schilling chipping in the area of points as well. That was also key for last night. And again, battling through adversity, you go back to these illnesses for Trice and Valentine. Valentine played great last night. I mean, he went 6 for 18, 15 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. Travis Trice, 1 for 8, bad shooting night for him, but he got others involved. He had 7 assists and went for 6 points as well. So, hey, again, this MSU team looked like a typical Tom Izzo team, not relying on the jump shot, getting out in breaks. If they do what they did last night consistently, Michigan State is going to be a force to be reckoned with, without a doubt. All right, well, let's hit our first break here on the show. When we come back, we're going to talk Ndamukong and Sue and give you the top 5 reasons why Sue should or should not leave the Detroit Lions. What do you think about it? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Go ahead and call in. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports, ladies and gents. I want to remind you that Current Sports TV returns this week. I am excited to be sitting down with certainly a friend of Current Sports, a dear friend here on the show, who has done a great, outstanding job with the Lansing State Journal. He's a Michigan State sports reporter for LSJ. Chris Solari joins me this week to talk about that thrilling Cotton Bowl win. We'll also chat about the MSU men's basketball team and just so much more, folks. Chris is going to be joining me. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience again this Wednesday, I tell you, weeks just fly by. I mean, when you get into a mode here on Current Sports and you have so much fun, I mean, the days get jumbled up. But tomorrow night, 6 p.m. here at the WKAR TV studios, Chris will be joining me. Go to WKAR.org to sign up online if you want to be a part of that live studio audience. It's going to be a fun one, folks. Alex, man, we have not heard your voice.
It's been a busy morning.
Wow.
Man. Phones are ringing left and right. We've had like 7 or 8 callers already.
Yeah, and we appreciate the love, folks. We always love hearing from our outstanding listeners. Some great calls today. But we haven't heard your voice through 45 minutes of the show. How you doing?
Doing well, man. And just to comment real quick on the Michigan State basketball game yesterday. Yeah, the stifling defense. It's amazing the fact that the Michigan State Spartans had 11 turnovers compared to only 6 from Indiana, and they still won the game. For me, that was completely shocking because as many of the listeners know and those that follow Michigan State basketball, when Michigan State loses the turnover battle, they most of the time lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows how good that defense really was yesterday against Indiana. Indiana looked like a bunch of kids on a playground trying to get a ball up to the hoop. I mean, they were losing the ball left and right, throwing air balls left and right. I mean, that defense must have been pretty darn good, Al. Brandon Dawson with the double-double, and we didn't even touch on this. You asked him the question, Al, about his role on the team and if he's that X factor. He admitted to it. Brandon Dawson told you, Al, he said, yeah, I know that when Michigan State and the team does well, I have to do well.
Right.
The
well, he said it starts with him. Yeah, he said he basically said, you know, when I go, the team goes. And I think that's a very good point, Alex. I mean, yeah, when Brandon Dawson has big games, it usually, you know, 80 to 90% of the time translates into success for Michigan State. And I think he has to consistently be a big factor. And I think that's a very, very good point. You know, going back to those turnover numbers, I think there's two alarming things about that. I mean, if you look at those numbers, I mean, they're not gaudy. So both teams didn't turn the ball over like a ridiculous amount, like 18 or 20 times throughout the game. They were really, really low. And the fact that Indiana only turned the ball over, you know, what you said, six times throughout the game, only six times throughout the game, and Michigan State blew them out by 20 has to do with the fact that they were getting shots up at the rim, but they weren't great looks because Michigan State was contesting everything. So they were dead possessions. And again, looking at the rebound margin, once they got that one look, that's the only look they got. No, Michigan State was not allowing any second chance buckets last night. A 50-28 rebounding edge? I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, that's your game right there. If you're only getting one opportunity every single possession and to get a shot off at the rim, I mean, what do you expect? So, yeah, I think two very good points there, Alex.
But they also went small, too, and that was part of it. They went with a small lineup. Maybe they went with a more kind of, you know, hustle-bustle, try to get with State down the court. But Michigan State, every time, Al, they beat them down the court. They ran really well. I mean, how many times did you see Trice, Dawson go up, Schilling for alley-oops and fast breaks? I mean, they ran the court yesterday.
Yeah, and I was, you know, looking at this game. I mean, I was really surprised because, again, this team looked like, you know, the Tom Izzo teams of old. Maybe they're hitting that stride. Who knows? Because I tell you what, Christmas break is such a key moment for Michigan State's, you know, for Tom Izzo and his teams, because that's when he really tests his team. And I think he did, and I think maybe we may be seeing the seed get watered and bloom a little bit here. So, again, folks, you want to weigh in on any of our discussion today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex, I briefly want to get your thoughts on this story before we close the show out with Top 5 Tuesday. And, again, it was really the first time that D'Antonio weighed in on Michigan's hire of Jim Harbaugh. It was during a teleconference with local and national TV reporters on MSU's 11-2 season and upcoming national title game between Ohio State and Oregon. The two teams that MSU was. Isn't that crazy? The two teams that are competing for a national championship are the only two losses that Michigan State had on their record. I mean, that's just remarkable to me. So if you're going to lose, yeah, it goes back to the old saying, if you're going to lose, lose to the best. At least you lost to the best. They lost to the best, the cream of the crop. So that puts a lot of things in perspective. But, you know, he was asked, about MSU's quest to stay among the nation's best, if it will be challenged by the hire of Jim Harbaugh. And if you didn't hear his comments, here they are. Quote, "That's occurred a number of times since I've been here. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge every time there's somebody new. Time there's somebody new in the Big Ten, there's going to be a challenge. Nobody hires bad coaches. There are no bad coaches out there. Very, very good coaches coach in this conference, including Brady Hoke and Coach Rodriguez. So it's a challenge. Inevitably, the top players play on the field. Coach Harbaugh is an excellent coach. He's got a tremendous track record. We all understand that. It'll be the next challenge for us. But we compete against Michigan regardless of who's there on a daily basis. We understand that here." End quote. That's a direct quote from Coach D'Antonio during a teleconference earlier this week concerning the Harbaugh hire out in Ann Arbor. Interesting. Interesting comments, Alex, because I tell you what, he was asked two times previous to these comments, and D'Antonio didn't even give us a whiff.
Well, the times he was asked, I kind of feel him because it was right after the Cotton Bowl win. And at that point, that was one of the best games in history.
Right, I agree. Who wants to talk about Michigan when you just come up with when you just beat the number five team in the nation? I totally agree with that. But, you know, the mere fact that D'Antonio did answer this question kind of shows me that maybe the rivalry is coming back. Now, I want to preface this by saying, I believe that the rivalry's always been there. I mean, heck, it's Michigan and Michigan State, for goodness sake. It's one of the biggest in-state rivalries, possibly the biggest, that in the state, period. When you look at it, there's always been a rivalry. But the way that MSU has dominated on the gridiron these past few years has been, you know, it's been, they've been ho-hum matchups. Ho-hum. The fact that Harbaugh and the weight and hype surrounded around this hire and the Harbaugh name. I mean, I feel as though there are many people out there crowning Michigan before they even play a game simply because of the hire. I mean, that's all you hear about. That's the talk of the town. And sort of many people may be forgetting about Michigan State and forgetting about D'Antonio and the success they had this year. It's always how it's been because it is Michigan. And I think that this is one of those things where D'Antonio, you know, that chip on the shoulder mentality, this is one of those things that this team can feed off of and maybe amp them up for the upcoming year. This is going to be such a big game, and I want to be in the house when D'Antonio and Harbaugh go at it.
You'll
I will be there, man. It's going to be fun. But, yeah, I think the rivalry is officially back just with the mere fact that Harbaugh's name is at the head coaching list right now. What do you think, Alex?
No, absolutely. And he didn't allude that it's back now, but he said that it could pose as a potential challenge in the future.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying it is bad. It's just Al Martin talking.
Yeah,
right,
and look, exactly. When Brady Hoke came, he had that great success with San Diego State, you know, and all that. But the thing with Brady Hoke was that they didn't really know what he would do yet. And when you saw his struggles throughout the year, that's when we all kind of jumped on the bandwagon. When I say we, I mean you and I, Al.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of jumped on the bandwagon that – that Hoke in the Michigan rivalry wasn't the same. But now you look at the reports coming out about who Jim Harbaugh is going to hire on staff. I mean, let me read you some of the potential hires that Michigan might have alongside Harbaugh. Former USC offensive line coach, who also served as the 49ers offensive line coach, Tim Drevno, is supposed to be the OC, the offensive coordinator. DJ Durkin, under Will Muschamp, was one of the best defensive coordinators in the country 2 years ago. He's rumored to come back to be the defensive coordinator. I mean, the guys on this list that he's going to be targeting are NFL guys.
Right.
So when you're talking about Michigan State under D'Antonio, who doesn't have that NFL experience, the whole Harbaugh...
And he's losing Narduzzi.
Harbaugh staff and even Tyrone Wheatley, who's the Bills running backs coach, is going to be now interviewing, like you said. It's the NFL versus the college here with Michigan State. That rivalry now is basically... came up and coming and is now back in my eyes.
I think so, man.
So if these hires come through, I mean, with the talent and the resources that Michigan will have with this offensive, with this NFL talent base, it's going to be quite the games to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm definitely going to be in the house when that game happens. It's going to be fun. All right, Alex, so let's close out the show by closing out this Ndamukong Suh discussion. It's Top 5 Tuesday, folks, and today's Top 5 Tuesday centers on the top five reasons that Ndamukong Suh should or should not leave the Detroit Lions. Should Sue stay or should he go? Yes, that's today's Top 5 Tuesday here on Current Sports. What do you think about it? Again, only 5 minutes left, so we'll go social media, and I'll read your comments on tomorrow's show. Go to Facebook.com/CurrentSports or tweet me at AlMartinWKR, and I'll read those tomorrow. But, you know, if you look at this, Alex, you know, it was an interesting point brought up earlier in the show, I believe about from Kurt from Grand Ledge, and he talked about, was it Kurt from Grand Ledge or either – Jim from Lansing, one of them brought up how, you know, Sue will possibly be back because the Lions could enact the franchise tag. Now, if they do, again, you're taking up $36 million in cap space. Sue's rookie contract voids 5 days after the Super Bowl, and that's when he officially can start testing the waters, meeting with different teams, and weighing out different propositions. If you look at, you know, the other personnel in that defensive line, I mean, you got guys like C.J. Mosley, Nick Fairley, George Johnson. All of those guys are also heading into free agent play. So it's interesting to see because there's a lot of moving parts in this discussion. I'm just going to come out and say it right now, Alex, and give you my top five. I think that Sue is going to go. And this is why. Five, is he happy? You saw Sue in that presser tore up in tears after losing to the Dallas Cowboys. You saw how he came out when he was asked about the free agent market throughout most of this year. How, you know, he didn't come out and give a definite yes that he's coming back. He said, hey, talk to my agent. I just kind of question now, after having such a heartbreaking loss and knowing that you could be on another team possibly competing for a championship, is he happy with that? And seeing the tears flow, I just don't think Ndamukong Suh's happy. And I wouldn't blame him if he's not happy. Four, a more attractive location. The Detroit Lions, even though they were great this year, have a certain stigma of failure, a certain lure of non-success, a dark cloud, if you will, that is around this franchise and has been for quite some time now. The Detroit Lions have never won a Super Bowl. The Detroit Lions used to be laughed at, especially looking at, you know, the early 2000s days, and then going 0-16. They have such a background and perception that is not attractive when talking about NFL teams. I think Sue may test the waters and say, hey, I want to go to a better team with a better history. Number three, again, fresh start to change his own perception. Ndamukong Suh is known as a dirty player. I'm just going to come out and say it. He's had multiple run-ins with league personnel, multiple dirty plays. I mean, more recently he had to step on Aaron Rodgers, so on and so forth. His perception from a good player standpoint is not non-existent. I think Sue may want to be looked at now as his career goes on as one of the good guys, one of the classy guys. Going to a new team with a fresh jersey can change that perception. Two, the opportunity to make more money. Again, if they franchise tag him, I mean, you're talking about $36 million. That's a lot of moolah. Would the Lions do that? Who knows? But they can franchise tag him. But again, seeing the season that Ndamukong Suh had this year, many teams are going to be willing to throw him a boatload of money for him to come to their franchise because he is one of the dominant defensive players in our game. A lot of eyes are open now from a lot of NFL executives, and they want Sue to wear their jersey. They're going to throw a lot of dollar bills out at him. I think the temptation is going to be so great that Sue is going to eventually leave. And number one, he's not winning, period. That's number one. Winning trumps everything. No. Moolah and winning trumps everything. He hasn't won with the Detroit Lions. He wants to win, Alex. And an NFL career doesn't last that long. Ndamukong Suh wants to win, and he wants to win now, and he's not getting it done with the Lions. I think he goes.
Yeah, it's a good top five, and I agree with you. Ideally, I would like him to stay. I don't know about you, Al, but there's a perception that people just don't want him to stay. Detroit fans don't want him. I personally would like Suh.
Really? I haven't heard that.
Yeah,
new one.
Some people are like, you know what? The image, he takes, you know, just get rid of him. I mean, I personally would love Suh to stay.
Right, I would too.
So my top five reasons on why he will leave, like you said, the image is already tainted in Detroit, you know, playing on another team. He's already, you know, with the stomping players, you know, that's already tainted. Number four, and actually, before I get to my number four, they actually had an ESPN 30 for 30 profile. I think it was an E60 profile. Mm-hmm. I actually saw it last night, and he just shows that, you know, that other side to Suh, that more passionate side. But number four, the franchise tag, like you said. Number three, which we haven't talked about, moving to a new conference, that predicts to a lot of teams they're not playing him every day, they're not playing him every year. He could benefit from that. Teams not really familiar with his style of play, offensive line coaches, maybe drawing up new schemes they may need to in the AFC. Number two, tarnishes team rep, already bad with players. I mean, the Lions already have a bad rep with Dominic Raiola, with other players off the field. It's not the first time. And number one, like you said, the answers reported during the interviews this year, I mean, nothing hints that he's really going to stay. So
yeah.
I have to agree with you.
All right, so we both agree. Suh will not be a Lion next year. What do you think about it? Go to Facebook.com/currentsports. Leave a comment there or tweet me at AlMartinWKR. I'll read your comments tomorrow, folks. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be chatting with Kevin Gale from WLNS TV6 and Bob Every from the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame tomorrow. Be easy, people.